Moving that self-awareness from being in your head to being able to connect it to what's your body feeling, how does it show up as stress, what's the impact it's having on you, is where self-awareness needs to go. It has to drop from your head to your body. And that's when you will understand that resilience is not about grit and pushing through. Because let's be clear, the system will reward that pushing through, that grit. The only person who can rejuvenate themselves or stop themselves from burning out is yourself.
Rochelle Trobe, you're an HR executive, coach, and respected people and leadership professional, known for your values-driven approach to work, culture, and leadership. You're also the author of three books, the third one being Anchored, Staying Grounded When Everything Speeds Up, which is being released towards the end of this month. You spent your career helping organizations navigate complexity by putting people, trust, and clarity at the center of decision-making. Welcome to our chat today, Rochelle. I'm really looking forward to exploring your insights.
Thank you, Alan, and I'm delighted to be having this conversation with you.
Good stuff. Now, you talk about burnout and reinvention, and you make reference to your own experiences. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my experience was, as an HR person, a little embarrassing in the sense that I actually did burn out, but I didn't even know I was burning out. Because my head was saying, you're fine, you're delivering, you're doing a great job. But my body was protesting and saying, no, this is not good enough. And soon enough, the conversation in my head was so loud, it was drowning everything else. It was affecting my sleep. It was just affecting my ability to engage and connect with people in the day because I was just so absorbed and so exhausted. And so I'm quite embarrassed to say I had burnout, but I can't be embarrassed because if we look at the fact that people have burnout, why do they have burnout? They don't have burnout because they're failing. They have burnout because there's this slow disconnection happening inside of them. And that's where it starts. And that's why I'm so passionate about talking about this because it creeps up on people. And some people experience it like I did, or others literally have. Sometimes nervous breakdown, sometimes complete collapse, sometimes their body just does all sorts of things. And it's not okay. But I think if people understand what burnout is, it will be a lot easier to demystify the fact that it's actually not exhaustion. Burnout is actually disconnection from self.
Now, is there, as you reflect on it and you interact with other people with regard to the matter, are there typical people that are more prone to burnout that need to be alert to it and watch out for certain things?
Absolutely. You know, all those high performers that are constantly running non-stop performance, performance, performance. Let's deliver this, 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 and this. Those are the people who are the first candidates for burnout. Why do I say that? Because somebody who has a propensity, and I'm generalizing, to perform and excel. There's this internal motivator driving their performance. So sometimes when you're so focused on output and delivering and excelling and climbing and growing, you have to stop and ask yourself, what's driving that? And as I found out, I had a dark side to me, not dark in terms of completely negative, but dark in the sense that what was actually driving me were old patterns that I formed as a child. That behavior led me to be this high performer. So when I look at high performers, and a lot of the high performers I've worked with, most of them have the same signature that I did. The question becomes, what are you driven by? So to link it back to why is burnout for me considered disconnection? It's because when you start to unpick, you realize that the reason why you're this high performer in many cases is driven by the wrong base. And that base is what is your belief system, because the belief system you formed as a child was there to keep you safe. But that belief system that you created as a child doesn't work in the adult environment. Why? Because life has changed. Life has evolved. It no longer protects you. It becomes like a double-edged sword. It becomes an overused strength. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it becomes an overused strength. So high performers are my top candidates.
So how can these high performers stay grounded then?
Well, the first thing is you have to really stop. But most high performers don't know about pause. They don't know how to stop. They're so busy chasing things that they don't realize that they need to actually stop. So that's the hardest part, and that's the reason why everything I do is almost impossible to reach people, because people don't want to hear the painful truth. Because for a high performer to stop, a high performer has to have an honest conversation with themselves. And 9 out of 10 times, it's touching stuff that is so uncomfortable. They don't want to go there. Or they're afraid of the consequences of going there, or they are afraid of losing the status they have, where they are in their careers, which is largely ego-driven at this point. So it's a topic that people don't want to touch, don't want to go to. But for me, the first thing I would do is stop and ask yourself, what's driving me?
Rochelle, you say people don't want to go there. Why is that?
Because of what it means. So, for example, I'll use myself as an example. At the point at which I said I had burnout, had just moved to Switzerland. I didn't even know I had burnout, but my burnout started before I left London. I was working for a pharmaceutical company, and I had everything I wanted. I had home in South Africa as a holiday home, two homes in the UK, a fat bank balance, lots of money, status. Everybody wanted to talk to me. I was important enough. But the reason why I left that company was actually my own ego. My own ego not being comfortable with the role that this Japanese pharmaceutical company decided they wanted me to do after a restructure. It was pure ego. Because to be honest, I could have done the role. But no, my ego said, no, that's not what I want. I want something more. It was this need to get more. But the question becomes, what more did I need? I had everything. Why did I have to leave my job, which then resulted in me having to take a job in Switzerland, moving my family to Switzerland, then getting to Switzerland and having the same experience, the ego driving me? As opposed to looking inside of me, what was driving me at that point? Okay, there were some circumstances. My ego was speaking louder than my common sense. My husband at the time was unemployed again. We were building this very luxurious home in Benguela Cove in South Africa, just outside of Amanus. And I'm going, we have plenty of money, but I have to work. I have to be able to put money in to keep growing the bank balance so that we can continue to fund the lifestyle we have. So ultimately, it was me thinking, I don't have a choice. I have to earn money. I have to maintain this lifestyle we've set up without stopping and saying, well, actually, when is enough? How much more do you really, really need? Long story short, I've blown that all up, but I'll stop there.
I was speaking to you talk like that about when is enough. Made me It just triggered a memory of mine. I was interviewing somebody from the UK. Oh, I can't remember who it was, that said to me that he spoke about himself. He said, I've got friends who have Rolls Royces and Ferraris in their driveways, but they still drive themselves like demons because they fail to understand the law of enough. And that spoke to me so you're talking about that, knowing about enough. Now, are you suggesting that these high performers are people that have a I hesitate to say it almost, a lowish level of self-awareness in themselves, that they're not aware of what they're doing to themselves.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is it's something much deeper than that.
Like what?
If you don't understand what's driving you, you will never have a pause button. So I'll use myself again. What was driving me? I was one of 10 children. I was the baby. Okay. My mother clearly loved me, but had no capacity for me. So what happened when I was born? I was in the last four of us, were all 1 year apart. My siblings in that four of us had some health issues. So where was my mother's attention? My mother's attention was on the ones who needed help, not because she didn't love us, but as a baby, I was fed, clean, put in my cot. And my siblings told me this because obviously I have no recollection of it. But at that point of my life, I was taught to become independent. I was taught that the only way to get something is to push, I mean, I used to cry as a baby for attention, but ultimately I learned two things. Your success depends on you. You have to shout to be heard. And you cannot survive on anybody else. What does that mean in terms of my adult life? In my adult life, it meant only I am going to provide for me. At this point, I'm married with twin boys. I don't want them to have the education I had. I want them to have the best education. So I was driven by that, translated into driving at all costs to be heard, to be seen, to be recognized in society, to be recognized through stature, wealth, all of the crazy things. But not once did I go back and say, well, actually, where did I form this crazy view? So my entire life was driven from a behavior I learned in the cot. Now, of course, I'm giving you a very simple example. You basically have to unpick it. Did I get back to that early formation immediately? No. I had to unravel my behavior and figure out what was driving me. What are some of the things along my journey that shaped those beliefs? So simply put, you come into the world, all you want is love and safety. So my screaming and seeking attention was I wanted attention, I wanted to be seen, I wanted to be heard. You go to school, what happens? You get put in neat rows. What do you get taught? You get taught conformity, you get taught to comply, you get taught to work in the system. You go to university. I'm mixed race in the South African context. I went to University of Natal, and when I went, I was one of five mixed race kids. Completely felt out of place. Came from a colored school. South Africans will understand this context. Going into a university that was largely for whites at the time, I felt inferior. So this person who grew up wanting to scream for things, became inferior by the time I got to university. So the inferiority complex started to think. So it grows and grows and grows. And ultimately, you go to the corporate world. What happens in the corporate world? We taught to compete. How are we taught to compete? Because if you just look at the organization structures, we have functional roles, we have business roles, and I know. I was executive on a leadership team. I was being measured by the commercial output, but I had a functional role. So at this point, you get pushed through the system, you're taught conformity, fitting in, but the risks get higher as you climb in the corporate world. The risk of speaking up means I may be part of the next restructure. The risk of speaking up means I may not survive in this organization. The risk of speaking up means you could get in trouble because you're going to be the outlier. So, snowball all of those beliefs, what originally was to keep me safe, became a hindrance because I eventually stopped speaking up. Then burnout, which meant I had to go and unravel all the stages of my life to understand how my self-beliefs were formed to make me that high performer. Realizing I was driven by the wrong things.
Now, Using all your experience, what do you, knowing what you know, having gone through what you've gone through, what do you say people should be doing in companies now to create that environment that is not it's not conducive to the burnout thing? What could they do to kind of create a culture that soothes things, as it were?
Well, first thing is acceptance. We have to accept that we live in a world that's never going to slow down. If anything, I was just reading the risk report from the World Economic Forum. No longer are things episodic and in waves. You know, change in the past used to go in gradual waves. Now everything is colliding, everything is happening. So the first thing is acceptance. Accept that the world will never slow down. Accept that the organization is built for efficiency, for profit, for results. Accept that. Don't try to fight it because you can't change it. Because let's also be clear, the same people who run the organizations, who run the world, who run the economy are human beings. We all have the same problems. We don't have different problems. So, if you accept there are certain things you cannot control, and you accept that the only person you can control is how do you stand in this world that is continuously shaking? And that's exactly what the book is about. The book is all about I can't change the world, but I can change how I show up in the world. So, that's the first thing, acceptance. Accepting the paradox of life. And accepting that you hold the key. Why do you hold the key? Because what I discovered in my journey, it didn't take 1 year, it took 4 years, by the way, to rediscover myself. And I would say it was realignment, realigning of myself back to the person I was as a baby. Because I'm no different to who I was. I've just realigned and reshaped my thinking. So it's you can control it, but you have to choose to control it, which means you have to have the courage to look at the things that are driving you. You have to have the courage to accept some of your painful truths in order to survive in this paradoxical world. Because the system of the corporate world drives you to compete. Our performance metrics, our talent systems. And let's be clear, Alan, I had the best leadership development program. I had executive coaches for every executive role I had. I've spent 16 years at an executive level. It's not that I was not self-aware. I was self-aware, but I was self-aware in my head at a conceptual level. Moving that self-awareness from being in your head to being able to connect it to what's your body feeling. How does it show up as stress? How does it, what's the impact it's having on you? Is where self-awareness needs to go. It has to drop from your head to your body. And that's when you will understand that resilience is not about grit and pushing through. Because let's be clear, the system will reward that pushing through, that grit. The only person who can rejuvenate themselves or stop themselves from burning out as yourself. I've said a lot.
I should have got my popcorn out.
I'm so passionate about this. It's exactly why I've written the book because I know not many people have access to this learning. So, this book, if you simply read the book, you'll be able to do what I've just said.
Give us a couple of sentences, a summary of the book then.
So the book is it's simple. How do you stay grounded in a world that never stands still? How do you do that? By becoming more self-aware, by understanding that you have more power than you think. If you simply look at the symbolic nature of the book cover, the reason why I have a tree on it is because, and the reason why the bottom is yellow is because it's showing everything you have and need is already there. So this book shines the light on the roots, which is yourself. Because if you focus only on that, your tree will grow, the life will blossom. You will impact the organization by changing yourself. You'll change your department, you'll change your team, you will have a ripple effect on your family, you would have a ripple effect on the community, and you push the change outwards. At the moment, what happens in corporate? We constantly focus on the system doesn't work. This organization doesn't value us. I have a terrible line manager. I have a toxic boss. You know what the truth of it is? I've worked in seven organizations, and in reflection, not one of those organizations was the problem. I was.
That requires a lot of self-honesty, though, too, and courage to face yourself. So, oh
Yes.
my goodness. Okay, now, Rochelle, we've got to that part where I'm going to throw a couple of rapid-fire questions at you now. So, these are just now using your experience that you've acquired. Okay, one leadership behavior that's underestimated.
Compassion.
Why?
Because
Aren't there a lot of leaders that think that compassion is a weakness, in a sense?
exactly, but it's your greatest strength. Because if you s learn to look at yourself and others with the same level of compassion, we'll stop pointing fingers at each other. We'll start to listen better.
Okay.
Compassion is the single ingredient that changes the outcome.
One leadership behavior that's overused.
Performance driven.
And a practice that every leader should adopt.
Pausing.
Okay. A question leaders should be asking their teams more often.
How does this deliver what we're trying to achieve?
Okay, last one. One word you'd like people to associate with great leadership.
I'd go back to compassion. It's the heart of it. This world is so full of stuff. If we could only just look at each ourselves firstly and everyone else with compassion, we're all in this mess together. I mean, I say the world is a mess, but I mean, it's an opportunity at the same time. Compassion.
Okay. As we wrap up, I always put the same thing to every person I speak to. This is it. You have a lot to say. You've written three books, so you've got a lot in your heart. What is it that you want to say to people that we haven't spoken about?
You have the power, use it.
I'm not going to mess with that. I'm going to leave it at that. Michelle, many thanks for your time, for your insights, and your compassion. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I've loved having this conversation with you.
Likewise.